everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I see it's official, at least on the forecast that I've been seeing from the National Weather Service. They're now predicting 100 degrees on Sunday.
Oh, those rascals. Will they never make up their mind?
And they've even put out a percentage. So there's a 4 in 10 chance that we'll hit 100. And if it was like last year.
Well, those aren't very good odds.
No, if it was like last year, it hit 100 for 5 minutes, but it still went into the record books as an early 100. I think it was late April last year. Anyway, welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. Final Friday in April, already here. April 28th, 2023. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. We're in our 13th year with the radio show, our 35th year on TV and radio in the Tucson market. We have our worldwide live listening on the BuckmasterShow.com website and KVOI.com, Buckmaster Live Line. That's for all of our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media friends, thank you. We like to do our Friday media shout-out. Dylan Smith, thanks, Dylan, for what you're doing at the TucsonSentinel.com. Dan Scheer, thanks, Dan, and I can say that to you in person, and what you are doing and you and your team at the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Thank you for your support over the years.
Thank you, Bill.
The Tucson Local Media Group, they have Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. The Friday Focus interview today, we welcome back to the show Farhad Mogimi, the Executive Director of the Regional Transportation Authority. In May of 2006, so we're talking almost 22 years, Farhad, to the day. So we're coming up on the big anniversary, right? Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me on the show. Good to see you, Dan.
Pima County voters approved a 20-year transportation plan back in May of 2006, funded with a half-cent sales tax from the RTA's taxing district, which was established by the Arizona State Legislature. The goals of the $2.1 billion plan were to reduce growing congestion at the time, improve safety and regional mobility, and expand transportation, well, expand the choices of transportation to meet regional and transportation demands. Farhad, has that goal, have those goals been accomplished so far?
Yes. Thank you for that overview. As part of our ongoing performance review, we do have what's called an independent audit by the state, and they've been down here twice already since 2006. So the first time was in 2017, and the most recent one was just last year.
Pretty thorough audit?
Exactly. And so that is the intent of that audit, to make sure that the goals and objectives of the voter-approved plan have been met, and I'm really pleased to tell you that both in 2017 as well as 2022, both reports highlighted that the goals and objectives have been met, even despite some lower-than-anticipated revenue collection due to the Great Recession. We're able to meet all of the goals and objectives of the plan to date. And as you mentioned, we have 3 years left to complete the current plan.
So it would be very helpful to give us a quick overview. How many projects, what was in the original intent, the original 20-year plan? Where are we in that plan?
Sure. So the 2006 plan was, as you mentioned, was focused on individual projects. There were 35 named projects in the initial plan, and the projects have been completed in some cases in phases, and in some cases they were smaller projects that a couple of them are still yet to start. For example, I'll talk about some larger ones that were done in phases. Grant Road, from Oracle to Swan. That was completed in multiple phases. There is another phase that's going to be starting here soon. And then there's a final phase that hopefully we'll have that under construction within the next 2 years. Halton Road is another example that was done in multiple phases.
These are kind of marquee projects.
Exactly. Yeah. And these are definitely the ones that we heard from the public early on in the process that they would like to have them done. And one of the reasons they were broken up in phases was because they prioritized those individual phases and they were implemented early on in the process, especially if you keep in mind some of the projects that are in the urban areas. They take a little bit longer to plan and develop and build. So those projects, most of them have been completed to date. We do have a few projects remaining that hopefully will be either the phases or the projects will be under construction within the next 3 years, which is by the end of June of 2026. As part of our analysis for the next plan, we started looking at a few projects that potentially could be rescoped. And those projects are going to be moved to the next RTA plan.
These are that are potential carryover projects to the next plan.
Exactly. So there's four of them currently that are being considered for being in the next plan. And mainly it's because some of them, the scopes are changing. And I'll give you a perfect example on Silverbell. So Silverbell Road, the last phase just south of Einar Road, initially it was planned to be only a three-lane improvement. Currently it's two lanes. Well, over the years there's been conversations about can we make that a four lane improvement, and obviously the additional cost and the scoping has to be discussed. So that's a perfect example of a project that now we're considering to put it in the next plan to ask the voters, are you willing to pay the additional cost to go from a three lane to a four lane? So that conversation is ongoing on making sure those four projects are identified and in the next plan. And then in addition to that, as you just mentioned, the new plan will expire in 2006. So we've already begun talking about the next plan and putting together a draft plan that we can take it out to the public and have that conversation with the community.
Okay, let's bring Dan Scheer into our conversation. Go ahead, Dan.
Last year, there was some concern out of Tucson that they were getting the short end of the stick on some projects. How did that all turn out?
Well, part of that conversation was unfortunately due to increase in construction cost. Over the last 2 years, I would say probably almost 3 years by now, construction cost increases have been significant, in some cases upwards of 40% cost increases. So the original plan and the amounts of funding that was approved by the voters are obviously being met. We are meeting that obligation that is based on what the voters approved. But the conversation was about what are we going to do with these cost increases and how are we going to be able to meet some of the project needs based on new and updated cost increases. And that kind of goes back to the four projects that I just discussed. By moving those four projects to the next RTA plan, we'll be able to have enough funding to meet additional cost increases in the current plan as well. So that was part of the solution that was by Regional Council, RTA Board. We've discussed being able to move those four projects and then use the cost savings from those projects to pay for all the remaining projects.
All of these have been brought up as issues, and I want you to tell us what is the biggest issue facing you right now. Supply chain issues, rise in construction costs, as you've mentioned, labor force issues, or unrealized revenue expectations. All of those are working against you. What's the biggest issue right now?
I think the biggest issue really was the cost increases. Obviously, various reasons why the costs have increased so much. But if you can imagine, you know, if you're saving money to buy a house and overnight that house, you know, went from $300,000 to $400,000, then you have to pause and come up with different solutions. So that's been the biggest challenge, to be able to meet the new increased cost estimates.
But weren't you using, RTA, using cost projections that were developed in 2006 when it came into existence? And that was part of the criticism, is that, look, we know things are going to get more expensive. Why aren't you budgeting more for these and then being prepared for it?
Yeah, so that's a kind of a part of an equation that unfortunately there is a lot of confusion about that. So there's two sides to that equation. One side of the equation is the actual construction cost, the expenditures, that obviously those are all increasing over the years. We know that, we monitor that. Over the last 2-3 years, it's been significant. And so that's where the kind of a difference in the approach has been. On the other side of the equation, you have the revenue, and the revenue is also increasing. So we had revenues initially as early as 2010 in the $80 million a year range. Our revenue currently is exceeding $100 million a year. So the revenue is also keeping up pace until 2020, when construction cost was so much higher that the revenue increases are not keeping pace.
Who could have ever predicted, when you were thinking about all of this back in 2006, a pandemic and inflation, the worst inflation in 40 or 50 years. But it is a challenge, Farhad, when you're trying to do these calculations for 20 or 25 years out.
Exactly.
Your crystal ball is, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. So the revenue projection side of the equation, that's also obviously a forecast. Mm-hmm. But we've been able to, every 3 years, update our revenue projections to get a better picture of what the revenue is. So like I said, we've been keeping up with that, balancing the cost and the revenue up until 2020 and the most recent cost increases, and this is happening globally everywhere. This is happening. So that's been the most recent challenge, and I believe the board has been able to address it by moving those four projects to the next plan.
Matt has called us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Matt, go ahead. You're with Farhad Moghimi.
Yes. First of all, thank you, Farhad, for all you do. But I was going to add one additional thing to you guys, since you brought this the issue up of costs, is that actually there was a period of time there where costs went down, because when we did the IOI project, the bids that were submitted, you know, actual costs actually came lower. So there was a period of time where we actually, between 2005 and today, where we even had costs actually go down in different places. Obviously, that's not the case since inflation kicked in and COVID and stuff, and supply chain issues, blah, blah, blah. Second thing, I sent to Bill recently something about Maricopa County with the MTA. I know it's not the same as the RTA because they got the rail line and some other things, and it's a bigger grouping, but they appear to be going through the same problem, where whether or not to extend the MTA over there too. I just sent it because it's an optics issue. I was just wondering if Farhad just follows any of that. And the last thing is, and very quickly, my concern is, again, how do we address the issue of some of what you brought up, costs, but on projects, but the other issue is maintenance. You know, how do we find a way in the next RTA to get money to somehow, I don't know, offset maintenance costs? And it may not be possible. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Do you follow what's going on, Farhad, up in Phoenix with their Metropolitan Transit?
Of course. Yes. Of course. Yeah. We're good partners and support each other. Sure. Obviously, their mission.
So they're kind of going through looking at what their future is like as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And thanks, Matt did a good job of highlighting that they're following a different state law, and we're fortunate that we don't have to go back to the legislators to get authorization to put a new plan on the ballot. Up in Maricopa County, the legislation that they are operating under requires approval by the legislators before they can even put the question on the ballot. So it became a little bit of a challenging kind of exercise for them. They tried it last year. They went through the entire process last year, and they went all the way up to the governor's office. And the governor, unfortunately, at the time, vetoed the compromise bill that was in front of him. So they're trying that again, obviously, with the legislation approval, if it comes forward, then they will start and they would put a new plan together to make sure they comply with any new legislative changes that would most likely be coming forward.
Now, Matt also brings up the maintenance issue about what will maintenance be a part of the RTA next plan?
Yeah. So as you had mentioned earlier in the conversation, back in 2006, maintenance was not an issue for anybody in the community. We had over 400 meetings across the region. And at the time, congestion and capacity improvements were highlighted as the needs. Now we all know, almost 17 years later, that maintenance has not been keeping up with pace as well. And so maintenance is becoming a topic of discussion. We are having those conversations with all of our partners. And it really depends on the framework, what framework that we can utilize to identify if there is a role for the RTA to address a component of that maintenance need. As you know, individual cities and towns and the county and the state, they are trying to keep up with the maintenance as much as they can. Unfortunately, keep in mind that the funding source that's used for maintenance is based on 1990, both federal and state legislation. So even those funding sources on gas taxes have not kept up with pace. So there's a challenge on the funding that's coming in for maintenance on that side of the equation.
And there is that challenge, Farhad, about who's going to do the maintenance. Yeah. I mean, if you have it as if it is a component of RTA Next, what are you going to have, like an RTA a maintenance group, a special designated group, or how is it all going to be divvied up, and who's going to do the maintenance?
Yeah, so that's
and pay for it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's yet to be discussed and decided. But, you know, from a public's perspective, they obviously want better roads. And regardless of who's doing it, they ultimately want to make sure that the level of service is acceptable and our investments in our roads hopefully are being maintained. And we're making sure that that investment is not deteriorating. So the discussion is important. We're going to continue to have that discussion. And like you mentioned, ultimately there needs to be a decision that who's going to do it with what funding sources. I want to go back to one more thing that Matt brought up, and I thought was really important. I appreciate him doing that. Yes, so shortly after the Great Recession in 2008, construction costs went down significantly. We were getting bids as low as 20% lower than what we had projected. So yes, there is always this ebb and flow and balancing of cost versus revenue, and he's correct that we enjoyed some lower than anticipated cost in early 2008 through almost 2015, I would say.
All right, gentlemen, let's pause right here, and I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. Dan, it's been a while since you made the trip. It is a way for you to go up, I know, to the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, to Mona's Danish Bakery, but Steve and the team would welcome you back with open arms to come up and have a lovely pastry. What would you go for right now? Some kind of a Danish or a croissant or what?
A whole pie, because I've had theirs before, and they're great.
And I love the way they've kind of, you can get the regular size pie, but if you like just like maybe a couple of pieces, it's kind of the size of like a quiche or something, an apple pie or cherry pie.
Wow. Well, I'm going to be filling in for you later in May.
Yes, and, we'll be going away for a while.
And I'm planning a trip over to Mona's.
Okay, Mona's Danish Bakery. Farhad, do you like bakery goods?
Of course. Do they deliver?
Ooh, cool. Let's put in a call here. Maybe they could get over here before the end of the show. Tom on the other side of the glass could go for something sweet right now. I know Tom has a sweet tooth like I have. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, monasdanishbakery.com is their website. Let's pause right here. We'll talk more transportation right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday Focus Interview. Farhad Moghimi is with us, the Executive Director of the Regional Transportation Authority. And I should also point out that his other hat that he wears, pretty darn important, Pima Association of Governments, known as PAG. So you've got that joint responsibility, correct, Farhad?
That is correct. And I can tell you a little bit more on the PAG side of the business
people don't
if you like.
Know much about PAC, but it's important.
Yeah, so the Pima Association of Governments is required by law, and the law was established back in the 70s for communities like ours that are growing, and we are definitely in a growth area, to have what's called an MPO, a Metropolitan Planning Organization. So PAG was formed as an MPO to look at regional solutions to regional challenges such as transportation, air quality, water quality. So that is our other hat, and we look at some of those regional issues that have no jurisdictional boundaries, obviously, and that's why there is a relationship between RTA and PAG, but the PAG side of the business is obviously much broader.
Well, you brought up air quality, and let me ask you, how is the air quality right now?
We are very fortunate. Our air quality is definitely much better than any other region that I can think of right now. Mm. A lot of other communities are still trying to address their air quality issues. We've been very fortunate, and ozone is really the only issue that we've been trying to monitor closely and make sure that our ozone levels are below standards. Unfortunately, what happened a few years ago was that those standards were lowered by federal government, and now we are trying even harder to make sure that we maintain our ozone levels below that standard.
Okay, well, I'm glad you did that we brought up at least air quality to talk about it, because it's certainly very important, right? Okay, Dan Scheer. Dan, before I give it back to you, Dan Scheer, editor, Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, Jeff has called us on the live line, and Jeff has a question. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, good afternoon, and I would like to know, originally when the RTA came into existence, it was sort of a desperation act to just try to get something done in this county pertaining to the roads. And in my opinion, it's been a spectacular success. But originally, when it came into being, it was the entity that was going to handle the big projects, the stuff that realistically were too big even for the county, stuff that required coordination among different entities, the railroad, the Indian reservations, city of Tucson, so on and so forth. I'll think of, for instance, the overpass at Ruth Roth, which was just a nightmare for years. And then now it's, you know, got that wonderful overpass over both the railroad track and the freeway. But now it seems like somehow or other, RTA was never meant to do maintenance. The idea was that pertained to the county or the city, or, you know, the RTA would handle the big stuff, and the other entities would handle, they would take care of their end of it. That isn't quite happening. It seems to me that almost by osmosis, the maintenance is sort of getting stacked onto the RTA along with the new construction of major projects, so on and so forth. So my question is, if the RTA is going to somehow get maneuvered into handling all this maintenance, what are we paying taxes to the city and the county for roads? It's a little bit of sleight of hand going on here.
All right. Maintenance.
Yeah, so I think that the best way I can answer that question is limited resources. So as I mentioned earlier, there are gas taxes, both state and federal gas taxes, that are allocated to cities, towns, and counties for maintenance purposes. And those taxes have not kept up with pace. Back in 1990s, that's when those taxes were enacted. And so RTA's role has always been providing supplemental funds for projects. And as you mentioned earlier, and thanks for that, but, you know, a lot of these bigger projects, without the RTA, we would not have that supplemental funds to be able to build any of those projects. And I'll use some of the projects we did in partnership with the state. Ina Road Traffic Interchange, for example, the overpass on Ruth Roth Sunset. Some of those bigger projects that even the state couldn't do it by itself, and we needed to supplement those funds for the state to be able to complete those projects. So you're 100% correct. RTA's mission has always been to supplement and ensure that we're enhancing the transportation system, and the current plan did not have maintenance included. So we were talking about possibility of the next plan, and would the RTA be able to supplement again, not supplant, but supplement any funding for maintenance needs.
Dan Scheer.
The sales tax, the half-cent sales tax, expires in 2026. When are we going to see a request for an extension on the ballot?
So our hope is to obviously make sure we go before June of 2026 when the tax expires, so hopefully there's no gap in the collection and the plan itself. We are required by law to have it on the ballot as two separate questions, the tax itself as well as a plan that the tax would pay for. Our goal obviously is to go before June of 2026. We don't have a date picked at this time. But as I mentioned earlier, we're working through that process with our committees and the board to have a draft plan to bring it out to the public. So we still have a few steps left before we can decide on the election date itself.
The previous plan, there were months and months of feedback, listening sessions. Is a similar program plan this time around, Farhad?
Definitely. That's the only way we do anything. Our goal, our hope is to ensure that anyone and everyone that wants to be involved in the process has a say in the process. They're able to provide their comments. We reach out and meet with a lot of different groups and organizations. As I mentioned last time around, it was about 400 groups and organizations. Right now, between myself and some of my staff and some of the board members, we are out there almost every day meeting with folks on a regular basis. The more information we have, the better off we are in the decision-making process. Ultimately, the voters have a say in this, and we want to take their pulse.
When do you think that might start?
It already started. We've been having those conversations for years now.
But I meant more of a kind of a formal,
yeah,
after the RTA Next,
exactly,
group. And you have quite a team. I think it's about 20, maybe 36 people on that advisory board working on that.
Correct.
Something like that. So what I was thinking, when does that, they will then kind of hand off to you and the team to do these formal public sessions.
Correct.
And I know you're out there all the time speaking to, pretty much every day you're speaking to groups about this.
Yes, correct. Yes. So the Citizens Committee is currently developing that draft plan. The deadline for a draft plan is July of 2023. So within the next couple months, once we have a draft in hand, then obviously we want to make sure that our board has an opportunity to provide some input on the draft plan itself. So we anticipate this coming summer is when we'll have an opportunity to have something in hand that we can go out to the public and get feedback on that draft document.
What happens if the voters were to turn down the plan?
Well, our goal is to make sure we get enough feedback and enough adjustments to the plan that we have the pulse of the community and we put something in front of them that we believe they're going to support.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's always that chance that the voters may not support the plan for any reason. And
mm-hmm.
and we've had this conversation on this show before that previously we had a lot of folks that even before and after the election told us that they liked the plan itself, but they didn't want to pay more for it. They didn't want to be taxed for the plan. So unfortunately, that's always a segment of the voters that are going to not support the plan for that reason alone. But I would say the stakes are high. If the next plan doesn't pass, we're looking at roughly $2.3 billion worth of investments that can improve our transportation system for the next 20 years in this region.
Dan, let's turn it over to you before we say goodbye to Farhad.
Okay, so we've been paying a half-cent county sales tax. Have you ever figured out per person what that costs? What am I paying toward the RTA every year?
Sure. The math is, obviously, it changes. As I mentioned earlier, it used to be annually about $80 million a year. Now we're up to about $110 million a year. But give and take, we've done back of the napkin assessment and an average. It's about $9 per person, so per month. So a couple cups of coffee, every week, depending on which coffee shop you go to. Some coffee shops, that might be just one and a half cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So it just depends. But $9 a month per person, and you assume an average household of 2.5. And so we're talking about $20 per month per household, roughly.
Are there any strings attached to spending RTA dollars?
Yes, definitely. RTA was very specific, very focused, voter approved. We can only spend RTA dollars on what's in the approved plan.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we had those named projects, then we have these buckets that are well defined, and we can only spend dollars on those things.
And that's where there's been controversy with some in the city of Tucson that wanted to kind of maybe go outside what is in the plan. And you wanted to say, from your fiduciary responsibility, you have to pretty much stick to the plan. You have to stick. Yeah,
of course. Yeah. And the danger in not doing that, obviously, would be next time we go back, then people are going to say, well, we want to make sure that you did what you say you're going to do, and we want to demonstrate that we have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already getting those kind of questions from a lot of folks when we meet with them. And you asked the question earlier, the current plan has been meeting its obligation spending money on the things we're allowed to spend money on. Anything we're not allowed to spend money on that can go back to the voters again, mm-hmm. and the voters have the say, and they can approve any of those additional desires for additional funding, as long as it's within the guidelines of the state statutes.
How is the streetcar doing downtown?
It's doing really well. And again, so having had all the development along the street, along the streetcar corridor, mm-hmm. has really benefited the entire community. And you're looking at commercial residential development. So the streetcar really became kind of that piece, that glue that brought everything together. So by various people's estimation, there's nearly another $2 billion worth of private investment since the streetcar came in.
Who maintains that, Farhad? Is that a city or what?
Yes. So kind of goes back to the RTA statutes. Any and all projects that are built by the RTA are ultimately turned back to the entity, whether it's a city, town, county, or the state, and they're responsible to maintain that from that point on.
Okay, Dan, any final thoughts?
You get county tax dollars, but you also get state and federal funds. Can you give us a quick breakdown percentage-wise on where your money is coming from?
Sure. So purely talking about transportation dollars, and this is on the PAC side of the business, we get roughly about $20 million a year in federal dollars that are used for transportation within the region. And then another almost $25 million of state dollars for transportation. Compare that to RTA, which, as I mentioned, it's been over $100 million a year. So percentage-wise, roughly 20% federal, 25% state, and then the balance is all RTA dollars.
Okay. Farhad Mogi, did you have anything more, Dan? Okay, you're okay. Farhad Mogimi, thank you very much for being with us. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right, we'll pause right here. I've got a couple of things to talk about with Dan Scheer right after this on the Buckmaster Show Friday edition. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday edition. Dan Scheer is here, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahorita Sun. He also is the editorial director for the WIC newspapers, the growing responsibilities of Dan Scheer. I think there are more than 30 newspapers in 13 states owned by Sierra Vista-based WIC Communications. And this has been a very interesting week, and some might say, and I would tend to agree with them, very sad week when it comes to local journalism, Dan Scheer.
Right. The Arizona Daily Star basically lost, almost a third of its newsroom overnight. And that is a tough situation for anybody. Nobody takes any satisfaction in that who are competitors of the Star, because we all want good journalism to be healthy and just... help these communities, help the county set the agenda, and be the force it can be. And so whenever you cut, it hurts. And the week before, we should note that they lost about a half dozen people out of their ad department, just as important in getting the word out and the paper out. So it's they have named a new executive editor, and that person, I think, really should start with a clean slate and just say, okay, what is it we want to go after? Because apparently, you know, the Star hasn't been supported by readers, if I can be so bold, and that you can see in the circulation numbers. We are all in that battle. Mm-hmm. We are all in that battle, and they, being the big paper, have taken more criticism than most. What do you do? Is it what led to this? Was it a corporate problem? Was it that the local paper wasn't delivering what people wanted or needed? Was it just part and parcel of what's happening in the industry? There could be lots of reasons, but there are good people over there. They looked at journalism as a calling, like a lot of us do. And this is just, as you say, a sad week in local journalism.
It's very interesting, as David Collier pointed out. David is the outgoing University of Arizona former director of the journalism school. He's headed for Florida, University of Florida, for a special freedom of information project there. But he pointed out on the show this week with me that 90% of the grads, of the journalism grads, they've got jobs almost immediately.
And you and I know from being in this business a long time that to be at a big metro daily like the Star or the Arizona Republic, where I worked for a long time, it used to be the Republic wouldn't even look at you unless you had 10 years of experience.
Of course.
And it was very rare that somebody would get in there under that as a reporter or someone in the newsroom. And now you can graduate and walk into some of these places. And it is the big metro dailies that are struggling more than the community newspapers, mm-hmm. and certainly much more than the national level, you know, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, those types. So they are in the biggest battle. And what they need to do is regroup and say, okay, with the staff we have, where should we focus? We can't do everything like we used to. We just don't have the staff and the money.
Your column this week in Wednesday's Green Valley News was about Matt Hines, Pima County Supervisor Matt Hines, who was on this program with me on Monday.
Yeah, very interesting. Good interview with him, by the
Thank
way.
You.
And so a lot of stuff has been going on at board meetings of late. He continues to take a lot of abuse during the call to the public. A lot of these are driven by the Pima County GOP that has kind of rallied the troops, and they go there and they just harangue him and harass him, and they're saying some pretty vile and crude things. That said, indefensible things, but that said, Matt Hines tends to bring some of this upon himself. A call to the public is their time. Mm-hmm. Their time to say whatever they want to you about any topic. And in the past, he has held up hand-lettered signs that say, you know, misinformation or lies. He's a medical doctor. He was very sensitive about what was happening during COVID and some mm-hmm. of the stuff that was out there that simply wasn't true. I get it. But Matt, this is their time, and just leave it to him. That was Supervisor Steve Christie's advice, is like, you know what? Take it.
Sit there and just let the folks talk.
And it's tough. I think he has this deep sense of right and wrong. But the fact is, you got what you got. Mm-hmm. And then when you strike back, it just makes them go after you even more. So it's kind of been this sideshow going on, when really Steve Christie, Matt Hines, everybody wants to just get on with the county business, but we can't if there's this nitpicking going on. And so it's really sad to see, but my advice is, like, you know what, let them talk. Mm-hmm. And don't get up and leave. Don't turn off your camera if you are dialing in remotely. Just listen to it. It's part of the job.
Should they retool the ground rules in any way?
Well, and that was the interesting part about your interview with him, mm-hmm. is that he made a couple of suggestions, throwing call to the public at the end of the meeting, which will just kill it. And he knows it. No one's going to hang around through all of this and to be able to speak their piece. Do you limit it to like a half an hour or an hour? Interesting thoughts. I know some entities have done that. Or do you, as some places have done, it's like, look, there's 40 of you out there. You all want to talk, but you all want to talk about the same thing. If you just raise your hand and say that you agree with this previous speaker here, we will know what the sentiments are. You don't mm-hmm. all need to talk. I've seen that done with some success at other places. So, you know what? The fact is, though, when you're a public servant, you got to deal with the public, and that's part of it.
Okay, Dan Scheer, thank you very much. We'll look forward to some of the great shows that you've got lined up in May. I've got kind of the annual trip that we take a couple of weeks in May. That's coming up, and you'll be here for quite a few of those shows. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Looking forward to it.
All right. We'll take our break right here. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
It is time for the weekend, and boy, am I ready. Award-winning Tucson publicist Matt Russell is the longtime host of Weekend Watch, which is presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. If 100 degrees just doesn't suit you this weekend in Tucson, may I suggest a road trip over to Silver City? You know, it's a mile-high elevation. That's about 5,500 feet above sea level, and that means it's going to be cooler. And we talk about this with Silver City, and we're going to talk about it more as we get into the hot weather. It's 10 to 15 degrees cooler over there. So if you're looking at like mid-80s, great hiking weather in the Gila National Wilderness. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for what to do, where to stay, and even where to dine. Speaking of dining and wonderful weekend activities, let's bring in now Matt Russell. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Bill. Will somebody please just get Dan Shearer a Danish Kringle, for crying out loud. I mean, he talked about the pies, but yeah, he needs a Kringle.
I know, his mouth was watering, I'm telling you, for some of those wonderful pastries that Steve and the team present up at Mona's.
You bet.
Yeah. Is it time for that agave festival again?
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, it really started out as a small tequila tasting at Hotel Congress a few years ago, but, Bill, it has now blown up into a four-day celebration of the agave. Of course, that beautiful desert plant that gives us tequila and other spirits and many foods, in fact. It's the Agave Heritage Festival. It happens all weekend long at Hotel Congress and a number of other locations around town. There's agave dinners and classes and lectures. There's bar takeovers and, of course, more tastings than I have time to mention, including that signature event. It's tomorrow night, the Agave Fiesta, with more than 50 artisanal agave spirits. So all the information is at agaveheritagefestival.com. Such a fun event.
So many good people trying to bring back what they call the ancient grains, our heritage grains. That's going to be celebrated this weekend, isn't it?
It's going to be so fun. You know, the heritage spirit continues this weekend. It's a special dinner that showcases heritage grains, as you said, and their multiple applications in the culinary arts. It's at the Tucson Village Farm on Roger Road. They're partnering with James Beard Award-winning baker Don Guerra on this wonderful dinner on the farm's outdoor patio to celebrate these grains. It's tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Proceeds from the dinner will go towards summer camp programming and scholarships, even the future Animal Education Center. So all the information is at Eventbrite. Just search for the Arizona Heritage Grains Dinner.
Is there anything in your lineup for those that, and I include myself in this category, that just love chocolate?
Well, I know from the show earlier that Tom behind the glass is a sweet tooth too. So you both should listen up. Now, we all love that movie, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And we all dreamed one day of getting that golden ticket. Well, that ticket is available to everyone now. And for only $20, you could get a behind-the-scenes tour of how chocolate is made at Tucson's own Monsoon Chocolate on 22nd Street. They craft chocolate bars and bonbons and confections, desserts, even beverages. They use transparently sourced cacao from all over the world. So tours are scheduled at various times throughout the weekend. So go to monsoonchocolate.com for all the deets and all the treats.
I know you love the West Indies. We do as well. We'll be off to Puerto Rico, St. Martin, and the Dutch island of St. Eustatius here in a couple of weeks. How was your visit to the BVI, British Virgin Islands?
Oh, it was Nancy and my first time there on a 48-foot catamaran, only six passengers, just casually sailing from island to island. It was paradise manifest, Bill. I mean, I could go on and on about the experiences there, the wonderful culinary approach, the wonderful drinks, the signature painkiller, which is sort of the cocktail of the islands, you know, fill in the blanks on what's in that cocktail. But anyway, the BVI, I could not recommend it more. The way we did it on that catamaran, simply the best way to do it. So, yeah, we had a blast. Lots of memories for a lifetime.
All right, Matt Russell, always a pleasure. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, you too, Bill. Thanks.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Christophon. Thanks to Rose Brandt, my assistant, making sure all the podcasts go up in a very timely manner. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. He's part of the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. All I can say is be well, everybody. Stay safe. Have a lovely weekend.